with step two and covering up to step seven. Like we did last week, very similar format. I'm just going to be sharing my experience, strength, and hope around the big book. As I said last week, I'm absolutely not an expert on the big book. This is just my experience of being taken through the big book and continuing to study the big book and bringing in podcasts and stuff that I've heard that have really helped me during my studying of the big book. So very similar format to last week, and we will be taking a short 10-minute break at 2:45 p.m. for those of you who are on Eastern time, and I believe that's 6:45 p.m. in the UK. So one of the things we did last week was we opened the session with the set aside prayer, and I talked last week about how this has been really important to me, and it was particularly important to me around step two, just trying to open myself up to have a new experience. And the lovely Lisa has agreed to read the set aside prayer for us, which will appear on screen any second now. Thank you, Eileen.
Hello, Lisa, recovered compulsive eater. Set aside prayer. Higher power, please set aside everything I think I know about you, myself, others, and my own recovery to open my heart and my mind to a new experience with you, a new experience with myself, a new experience with others, and a much needed new experience in my own recovery. Please show us the truth as we come together today to study the big book.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Thank you. So step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, and the spiritual principle is hope. So we're going to be looking at the chapter We Agnostics, which is chapter four in the big book. And I guess one of the things that the set aside prayer reminds me of is, and very much step two reminds me of, is limitless possibilities. And I heard a speaker talk about, you know, we seek what we find and we find what we seek, particularly when we come to step two. And they gave an analogy that if I go to the ocean with a thimble, I will get a thimble full of water. But if I go to the ocean with a bucket, I can get a bucket full of water. And so it is with step two. It really is kind of limitless in when we start to develop our relationship with a higher power. And one of the things that I struggled with a little bit with step two was the indication that I needed to be restored to sanity. And that clearly assumes that I am not sane when I come into OA. And I'm not insane because of the crazy things that I do around and with food. And I shared some of my crazy behaviors last week when we were talking about step one. The type of insanity the big book refers to is the insanity that takes control of me before I compulsively overeat. The insanity that makes me pick up my alcoholic foods and indulge in my alcoholic food behaviors in the first place. And the doctor's opinion talks about an obsession, and an obsession that prevents me from seeing the truth, from seeing things as they really are. And I believe the lie and not the truth. And that is a form of insanity. And I also take action based on that lie, acting as if it was true. Believing or acting on a lie is also a form of insanity. And my obsession to use my alcoholic foods causes me to ignore the truth and believe a lie. And that makes me insane. And the most dangerous lie is that someday, somehow, I can control, limit, and enjoy my alcoholic foods, and that I can eat like a normal person. And I can still, I'm coming up to 4 years recovered back from relapse, and I can still occasionally have those thoughts around, well, maybe it will be different, and maybe this time I won't do that behavior. I'll be able to eat that thing moderately. And that is never, ever going to be the case with me as a real compulsive overeater. And, in many areas of my life, I may react perfectly sanely. I shared with you some of my kind of life stuff, having a really good job, getting to the top of my profession, having a lovely family. So I am able to react sanely in many situations. In fact, nobody in a work context would ever have described me as insane. But with food, I am insane because I have difficulty seeing the truth and acting on it. When I'm in active addiction, I believe I can eat certain foods safely when the truth is I cannot eat those foods without serious consequences, and I can't stop myself from starting eating those foods. The other thing that really helped me around step two was knowing that I didn't actually need to believe in anything. I just needed to be open-minded. And for me, open-minded wasn't about layering new knowledge on what I think I know, because I can do that really easily. I can think, oh, yeah, I know that, I know that. Oh, here's a new piece of information that I'll layer on what I already know. It's really, truly about understanding that my way does not work as I saw in step one. And to be open-minded, I need a mind free of preconceived ideas and judgments. A bit like if a researcher is coming to a new trial, they're going to have open minds. They're not going to prejudge the outcome of the research study. And this is the approach that I need with step two. Because step two is asking me if I conclude I need a power greater than myself. Working the remaining steps is what's going to connect me to that power. I can't describe to you today kind of how that power works in my life. All I know is that my higher power is an energy I connect with, and I feel that energy here. That's where I really, really feel that kind of gut level connection to my higher power. And I'm learning to distinguish as I go on in my recovery that when I'm up here, that's usually self-will, that's usually Gail, when kind of messages and thoughts are coming from up here. But when I'm in this space, that's where it feels that I'm connected with my higher power. And I don't need to understand that energy. I don't understand the energy that makes the tides come in and out, but that happens every single day. And I don't need to ask the tides to come in and come out. Or how I see the moon at a completely different time to my sponsees who live many thousand miles away from me. I don't understand that. The other thing that works for me in terms of that analogy is I'm also a Reiki practitioner, and I do not understand how that energy works. All I know is that that energy works, and I feel it. I feel it in my hands when I am doing a Reiki treatment on somebody. So I don't need to understand any of this, and that kind of tripped me up a fair few times because I thought I had to understand it, and we'll get into that a little bit more. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that step two says came to believe that, not in. So it's not asking me at this stage to believe in anything. It's just asking me to believe that there is a power that can help me. And thank goodness it's different for everyone. Some people have a religious higher power, some people have a completely non-religious higher power. It doesn't matter. And there's a lovely paragraph on page 287 in the book. Would somebody just pop a virtual hand up and just read this for us, please? Anybody happy to do that? Thanks, Cindy.
Wendy. Oh.
Oh, sorry, Wendy, I'll get you to read the next one if that's okay. Sorry, I saw Cindy's hand first. So, Cindy, we're on page 287 and we're halfway down the page, and it's the paragraph that starts the idea that religion.
Okay, I'm Cindy, compulsive eater. Hi. The idea that religion and spirituality were not one and the same was a new notion. My sponsor asked that I merely remain open-minded to the possibility that there is a power greater than myself, one of my own understanding. He assured me that no person was going to impose a belief system on me, that it was a personal matter. Reluctantly, I opened my mind to the fact that maybe, just maybe, there is something to this spiritual lifestyle. Slowly but surely, I realized there was indeed a power greater than myself, and I soon found myself with a full-time God in my life and following a spiritual path that didn't
Tom?
conflict with my personal religious convictions.
Thanks, Cindy. Thank you for reading that. And yeah, paragraphs like that just brought me so much hope, because I didn't need to understand my higher power. I didn't need to believe in something that somebody else believed in. And there's a lovely couple of sentences on page 397 that says, just as importantly, I believe I recovered through the grace of a higher power, despite the fact that I was very angry and wanted nothing to do with the God when I arrived in AA. In fact, I did not need to find God. I only needed an open mind, and the Spirit found me. And that has been my experience in working with the steps. You know, at step two, I just knew that I was completely and utterly beaten, because I had had a really profound step one experience. So all I needed to do was trust and work the steps, and this beautiful higher power found me. And, you know, we often see recovery in other people. We can see that other people are connected to a higher power because of the beautiful recovery or recoveries that we're surrounded by. And Wendy, if you'll just read the paragraph on page 326, and it's the first full paragraph, and it starts, as I spoke.
Okay. I'm Wendy, compulsive overeater, food addict. As I spoke, I looked around the room. More importantly, I looked at the faces of the people in the room, and I saw it. I saw the understanding, the empathy, the love. Today, I believe I saw my higher power for the first time in those faces. While still up at the podium, it hit me. This is what I had been looking for all my life. This was the answer, right here in front of me. Indescribable relief came over me. I knew the fight was over.
Thank you, Wendy. And we talked a lot last week, didn't we, about the principle of attraction and how important it is to carry the message. And I just love that, because, you know, that is what I saw. I didn't necessarily know that's what I was seeing when I first came into the rooms, but that is what I saw in other people. And if I'm struggling with a higher power, I can look at another recovered fellow and ask myself, is this program working for them? You know, look at that person, look, listen to their story. And if I can do that, I can hold on to that. And, you know, also what helped me was considering if I think there's a better way for my life to be. You know, my life was pretty dire when I was in the food. It was really, really awful, painful, soul destroying. So could I just believe that there was actually potentially a different life for me? And it doesn't matter what kind of concepts we go with, you know, could I go with love and trust as a simple concept of God, of a higher power? What about the St. Francis prayer as a representation of the higher power? You know, that talks about peace, love, forgiveness, hope, joy, comfort, etc. The Big Book uses many different words for a higher power. It uses phrases like creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, my employer, a director. It doesn't matter what it is, but when I look at those terms that are described in the St. Francis prayer, I think, why wouldn't I want that? Why wouldn't I want that in my life? And I'm always reminded that, you know, I don't need to understand the laws of physics to boil a kettle. I just need to know where the switch is. And the switch for me is the steps. The steps are what is going to connect me to my higher power. So there's some really kind of to the point questions in We Agnostics that I think are really, really important, and particularly if somebody is struggling. So on page 44, it asks us, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, eating certain foods, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably a compulsive overeater. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So there's two fundamental questions there. Can I stop compulsively overeating, or can I stay stopped? If I'm eating certain foods, can I control the amount? And that's what the first 43 pages have been trying to get me to see. Do I truly want to stop compulsively overeating, or am I merely temporarily uncomfortable? You know, have I come to the end of the road? if I'm perfectly sure that I want to quit for good, if I'm serious about it, if I don't merely wish to get well so that I can take up compulsive overeating again for some future date, at some future date, it says I will be relieved. And I know, as I shared last week, that I only have two options. And it says on page 44, to be doomed to an alcoholic death, so to be doomed to a death from compulsive overeating, or to live on a spiritual basis, are not always easy alternatives to face. But I knew that I only had two choices, you know, and one of those choices was going to heal me, and the other one was going to lead me to an early grave. And I heard a speaker say that faced with those two choices, only an addict would debate which one they were going to go for. And, you know, I got to that point of surrender once, and I had 5 years incredible recovery, as I shared last week. But then I went to that place again with a 7-year relapse, because I forgot that I only have two choices. And we talked last week, didn't we, around, you know, when our external circumstances start to get better. You know, for me, my compulsive overeating manifested itself in morbid obesity. So once I'd lost, you know, a significant proportion of my body weight, and I was a healthy body weight, and I was living this amazing life, I can forget that I've only got two choices, and one is going to kill me and one is going to heal me. So it's keeping that fact of step one kind of central and not forgetting that. And then on page 45, it talks about our human resources, as marshalled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. And that was my dilemma. That is why I need a power, because I can't do it on my own. I absolutely cannot put the food down. I can't do it for my family. I can't do it for the slimming club leader. I can't do it for me. The therapist or the doctor can't do it for me. No matter how hard I try, I cannot do this. It's like trying to change my eye colour. It is completely and utterly impossible. I just cannot do this on my own. And the big book explains why that is. So a quarter of the way down page 45, it talks about lack of power. That is our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. And that was such a relief, because as I shared last week, I had hundreds of self-help books, and every self-help book that came out, I thought, this is going to fix me. This is going to be the thing that is going to fix me. And it didn't. But it tells me that I can stop trying to figure it out, because this book is going to tell me how to find that power. This is an instruction manual for how to find that power. And that's just wonderful news, because I no longer have a dilemma. I don't have to figure it out. I know I can't do it. I know that there's a power that can, and I'm going to be told how to find that power. I'm going to be told what to do. I'm going to get a set of instructions. And I see by this point that food is not my problem. Lack of power is my problem. Without this power, food is the power. It controls me and it owns me. And there's a great sentence in the AA 12 and 12 that says, our admissions of personal powerlessness finally turn out to be the firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built. And, you know, we talked last week about it's taken 43 pages for us to be convinced of our powerlessness. But once we're convinced of that powerlessness, the joy that is ahead of us is absolutely wonderful. So there's two readings. If you weren't here last week, we did quite a bit of flitting about the big book, because the stories at the back in the big book are just incredible for just kind of giving practical examples of what we're talking about. And on page 250, I just need two volunteers to read. So if two people will pop their hands up, that would be great. Thank you, Jennifer. So Jennifer, if you want to, we're on page 250, and it's halfway down the first full paragraph. It's the 10th line down, and it starts, Dr. Bob.
Okay. Dr. Bob dwelt at length on how prayer had given him release time and time again from the nearly overpowering compulsion to take a drink. It was he who convinced me, because his own conviction was so real, that a power greater than himself could help me in the crisis of life, and that the means of communicating with this power was simple prayer. Here was a tall, rugged, highly educated Yankee talking in a matter-of-course way about God and prayer. If he and these other fellows could do it, so could I.
Thanks, Jennifer. And then Amanda, if you could read from page 251, and it's the third line down, try prayer, and I'll just tell you when to stop.
Yeah, hi, Amanda, compulsive eater. Try prayer. You can't lose, and maybe God will help you. Just maybe, mind you. Having no one else to turn to, I was willing to give him a chance, although with considerable doubt. I got down on my knees for the first time in 30 years. The prayer I said was simple. It went something like this. God, for 18 years I've been unable to handle this problem. Please let me turn it over to you. Immediately, a great feeling of peace descended upon me, intermingled with a feeling of being suffused with a quiet strength. I lay down on the bed and slept like a child. An hour later, I awoke to a new world. Nothing had changed, and yet everything had changed. The scales had dropped from my eyes, and I could see life in its proper perspective. I had tried to be the centre of my own little world, whereas God was the centre of a vast universe of which I was perhaps an essential but a very tiny part.
Thanks very much, Amanda. Thank you. And I just love those two examples, because I think they're just two really, really simple examples of how a couple of people talking to a higher power and the power that that brings. I just think they're just really beautiful examples. So there are some conditions around step two, and they are described in the big book in this chapter. So on page 46, in the first full paragraph, where it says, yes, we have agnostic temperament, it says that we found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. And that links to the set aside prayer that we talked about and opened the session with today, about putting aside everything I think I know, all of my old ideas, and be open to a new experience. Could I just be willing to believe in a power greater than me? After all, step one showed me that my power doesn't work. It's no match for the food. If I can have an open mind and willingness, I'm told I will start to get results. And I don't need to figure out who or what my higher power is, because I'm told that it's impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. And for me, that was a completely new phenomenon, because in life, I am expected to know how to do stuff. You know, I'm expected to know how to do internet banking. I'm expected to know how to load the dishwasher. I'm expected to know how to do my job. So for me to put aside everything I think I know, you know, it sounds really simple, doesn't it? When we say the set aside prayer, it sounds like a really simple prayer. But actually doing that was really, really hard, because I think I know, you know, I think I know what the big book's saying. You know, I've sat in big book studies and heard people share things, and I've gone in my head, yeah, I know that, I know that. So this is asking me to not do that. It's asking me to open up myself, you know, my mind, my body, my soul, to a new experience. And right at the beginning, before I had a connection with a higher power, somebody said, you know, it doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what comes out of your mouth. Just say something like, and this was a really helpful prayer. You know, for me, it went something along the lines of, you know, God, I don't know if I believe in you, And I don't know if you exist, and if you do, and if you're interested in helping me. But I know others who believe in you, and they assure me you're real and you've worked miracles in their lives. And I need one of those miracles too. Will you please help me? And for somebody who'd relapsed, again, that was really important because there was a part of my brain that kept saying to me, well, you can't have had a higher power, girl, because you wouldn't have relapsed if you did. Now, I knew intellectually that that wasn't the case. I knew the reason I relapsed was because I stopped working this program and I didn't follow the instructions in this book. But my head can tell me anything. And that was one of the many stories that my head told me. Well, you can't have a higher power. So actually, one of the things I did in step two was I did a lot of work on reinventing what I wanted my higher power to be. And that was really, really helpful because we can change our higher power at any time. It doesn't have to be, you know, well, I'd like my higher power to do this for me. And then I can't change that. I can't revisit it. And then on page, further down page 46, it talks about in the last paragraph on the page, much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. So it doesn't matter. It's a bit like our plans of eating. It doesn't matter how somebody is facilitating their abstinence. I don't have to eat what somebody else is eating. It doesn't matter. And it's the same with the concept of God. It doesn't matter what you believe in. What matters is that I believe in inner power. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard turns who seek him. So we often talk about getting that real connection with our higher power later on in the steps. But actually this talks about we're getting a first infusion of power here. That's because all I need to do to have that first infusion of power is to have the possible existence of a power, whatever it is, and I will receive a new sense of power and direction provided I take these steps. And then it's saying that God doesn't make the terms hard for me to seek that connection, but I need to earnestly seek. And for me, with that same energy that I sought my binge foods, and as we talked about last time, the terms are outlined on page 63. And on page 63, we're told that our higher power will provide what we needed if we keep close to our higher power, which again, last week we talked about, we do that through taking steps 4 through 9 and then living in steps 10 and 11 and then performing God's work well, our higher powers work well, which is step 12. So those are the terms. If we do those two things, working the steps and helping others, then we will be given what we needed. And that has been my absolute experience and the experience of millions and millions of addicts all over the world. And then on page 48, it talks about being faced with alcoholic destruction. So being faced with destruction from compulsive overeating. We soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, food was a great persuader. Excess food was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. Sometimes this was a tedious process. We hope no one else would be prejudiced for as long as some of us were. And you'll all have your own stories, your own journeys. You know, certainly in my 7-year relapse, that felt like a very, very tedious process. But it's not always the case with everybody. Some people, you know, get abstinent very, very quickly. Other people, it takes years and years. And, you know, I do sometimes wonder whether we all just have our own path. But the destruction that I was experiencing from food, you know, food was absolutely leading me to an early grave. And I was just completely out of ideas. So the idea of a power greater than me wasn't too hard a proposition to face. And, you know, eventually, after another 7 years of suffering, I got in my absolute head and my core and my heart that I only have two options. But what happens to me is I start to want to analyze my higher power. I want proof, and that can get in my way. And, you know, I do not understand how electricity works. I couldn't sit here and give you a lesson in how electricity works, but I plug my hairdryer in every single morning and it works and I dry my hair, but I don't question it. I don't sit there thinking, well, how does that work? And I need to understand how that works. I don't need to understand how that works. And that is where I've had to get to with my higher power. And I know there's a few people in the room here tonight that that know me. And those people would tell you that I have absolutely zero sense of direction. I can be staying in a hotel, come out of my hotel room, and I have no idea whether to turn left or right. I have no sense of direction. So the sat-nav GPS analogy works really, really well for me, because I have to rely on my sat-nav to get me from A to B. And I trust it completely, because if I don't have my sat-nav, I am going to get lost and I am not going to get to my destination. So I have no sense of direction. So I set my sat-nav up and away I go, and I just trust it completely, like I grow to trust my higher power. I don't know how my sat-nav works. I don't want to know. I don't need to know. I just accept it and rely on it. And that's what I need to do with a higher power. And, you know, I've been driving for many, many years. So we didn't have sat nav when I first set off driving, but I didn't kind of drive very far, whereas now I drive all over the country. And my sat nav has evolved over the years. It can now tell me where there's heavy traffic, and it can give me an alternative route so I don't get stuck in that traffic. And again, just like my relationship with my higher power has grown over time, my relationship with my higher power has evolved. The other things about my sat-nav is I never think it's not going to work. I never think I'm not going to be able to hear it. I don't think it's going to give me the wrong instructions. And I don't think, well, your sat-nav's going to work for you, but my sat-nav isn't going to work for me. And I never think I don't need it, because I know I have no sense of direction. But yeah, I can think every single one of those things about my higher power. So I can work with a sponsee and I can absolutely see their recovery and the transformation that they undergo when they become connected to the higher power. But my head can say, oh, well, it's working for her, but your higher power is not working for you. Or, you know, well, you can't trust your higher power with your kids because you know better than your higher power and your children. And these are all the things that I can think when it comes to step two. And then there's an absolutely lovely example of hope on page 50, where it says, just halfway down the page, it's talking about men and women being strikingly agreed that every one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than himself. This power has in each case accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. And this is one of the many recovery promises this book gives us. And it's worked for millions of addicts all over the world. And it will work for me. It will work for you if we follow the instructions. And believing that others believe is often enough to make a start. And then it says on the same page that they flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude towards that power, surrender, to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, step one, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the overeating question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds, which is now millions, of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. And that has been my exact experience with this program. You know, what an amazing promise, but I have to put the work in and follow the instructions and continue every day to seek closer relationship with my higher power, no matter how long I'm in recovery. That's what I didn't do in my first recovery, and that's why I ended up relapsing. And growing a relationship with a higher power takes time. You know, I have to build a new habit, and I'm going to need constantly reminding that I can turn to that higher power in any moment. You know, practicing talking to God, you know, giving God a chance. If I don't talk to God, if I don't give God a chance, then, you know, that's how friendships develop. You know, no relationship is going to survive on 5 minutes a day. If you think of one of your closest friends, there is a reason why they're close, because you spend time with, you know, that friend, and you learn to grow and nurture that relationship. And quite often when I'm talking or when I'm thinking about my higher power, I'll just find myself really kind of unconsciously just putting my hand here, because, as I said, that is where I feel connected with my higher power. And just that simple action of, oh, just putting my hand in my kind of heart space just makes me feel instantly connected to my higher power. You know, I wear a necklace all the time, and I just touch that, and it just reminds me that I've got a higher power. And then page 52 is a really important page, I think, in step two, because it talks about what the big book calls the bedevilments. And this describes what is wrong with me. So this describes what my life is like when I am not connected to a power. And if I read this, if I personalize it and read it for me, it's describing exactly what my life is like. And it says, I was having trouble with personal relationships. So we're halfway down page 52. I couldn't control my emotional natures. I was prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living. I thought I had the big book there, because I was thinking, well, I did make a living because I had a really good job. And then I heard a speaker say, but it didn't make me happy. It didn't satisfy me. I was like a black hole. Didn't matter how much money I earned, it did not satisfy me. I had a feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. I was unhappy, and I couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see new newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. What that's talking about is, you know, that is how my life manifests itself when I'm living on Gail's will. So does debating a higher power, is it really, really important when my life feels like this? And there is a solution in the intervening pages, because just 31 pages later, we're actually in the promises. And how incredible is that? You know, we go from feeling like this, being full of fear, I can't have relationships with people, and I go to the promises, which are just incredible. I'm catapulted into this amazing different space. And all I have to do is follow the instructions in the intervening pages. And then on page 53, it talks about halfway down the page, you know, when I became a compulsive overeater, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, which I could not postpone or evade, I had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was my choice to be? And for me, if I lose my step one experience, then step two is going to overwhelm me. But if I keep close to my step one experience, then I know that the choices I have at this time are, number one, this disease is going to kill me. Number two, I'm going to live an unmanageable life abstinently. Or number three, I'm going to make my higher power everything in my life. So what is my choice going to be? I'm either going to believe that God is the power, or I am the power. And if I am the power, my life is going to continue to feel like the bedevilments on page 52. And it doesn't matter how bad my disease is. You know, there's a great sentence on page 110 that's talking about the family and our husbands. It's in the chapter to wives, and it says, many of our husbands were just as far gone, yet they got well. So it doesn't matter how far this disease has taken me, I can still get well. And again, on page 113, you would suppose that men in the fourth classification would be quite hopeless. These are real chronic alcoholics. Yet that is not so. Many of Alcoholics Anonymous were like that. Everybody had given up on them. Defeat seemed certain. Yet often such men had spectacular and powerful recoveries. And this program just does incredible things. You know, I'm just one example. It's changed my life beyond all recognition. But this is what our program does. It just works miracles. And, you know, there'll be many, many miracles sat in this room today. It's just incredible, absolutely incredible. And then another couple of things that have been really important for me in step two are on page 55, where it talks about deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by life, by my ego, by fear, by all sorts of things, but it's there. That power is deep within me. And I spent a long time, particularly in my first recovery, looking outside for that power. But what I'm told is that this power is within me, and the steps are going to give me a process to become unblocked so I can tap into that power. I experience God by taking the rest of the steps. You know, if I'm thinking, well, I need to have whatever it is, you know, the perfect job, the perfect car, the perfect relationship, I can't be happy if I've not got those things. I'm not going to be okay if I've not got those things. Then those are my idols which block me from God. And the reason it's not a simple process, or it certainly wasn't a simple process for me, is that my higher power and my ego are in constant tension. Therefore, I fluctuate between being in the power of me and being in the power of my higher power. And it says, sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. So when I've exhausted all other possibilities, that's where I look inside, and that is where my higher power is. And that confused me a little bit, because I was thinking, how can it be a power greater than me and yet it's in me? But I heard a brilliant speaker say, it's like a wave is part of the ocean, but it's not the ocean. I am part of God, but I'm not God. And I just think that is a really beautiful analogy that really works for me. And then again, we're told that we can only clear the ground a bit. But what it's saying is, the reassurance is that I can't fail if I take this attitude. I will become awakened to that which already exists within me. And that is what's going to happen when I take step two. It's just incredible, absolutely incredible. So there's just a couple of other paragraphs that I would like to read before we carry on, or I'd like somebody to read, because they give a really, really good example of what we've just been talking about. So the first one, can I have a couple of hands up, please? Anybody happy to read? Thanks, Vicky. If you want to read first, so we're on page 498, and we're halfway down the page, and the paragraph starts with, "I was told that AA is a spiritual program." And if you read that paragraph and the paragraph after, that would be great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I was told that AA is a spiritual program, and that I had better have a higher power. I knew nothing of God or higher powers, and I began trying to find one. At first, I thought that since I was a native, maybe I should practice the native traditional ways. Then I thought maybe I should go to the church on the reservation. Then I believed that if I went to college, AA meetings, and just sat there, I would have a vision and achieve recovery. One day, a member asked me if I believed that there actually was a higher power. I did believe there was a God of some sort or another. He told me that was enough. He said that belief in attending meetings, I would find a higher power of my own understanding. Today, I am thankful for that advice. After 3 months in AA, I returned home one evening after a meeting to hear the music and laughter of a party next door. some of my drinking buddies were at that party, and I just knew I was going to end up there. I did not want to drink, yet the party was like a magnet. I was full of fear as I ran across the street to a pay telephone. I called my sponsor, but there was no answer. Panic set in as I ran home. In the house, I went into my bedroom and sat on the side of the bed. I looked up and said these words, "Well, buddy, I guess there's just you and me." Believe it or not, it worked. Those simple words worked. Something happened. A little peace came over me, anxiety left, and then I lay down and fell asleep. I slept well that night and the first good sleep in a long time. That feeble request to God worked. I was honest and really wanted God's help. From that day on, I knew that I had found a higher power and that he would help me.
Thanks so much, Vicky. So I think that's just a really beautiful example of what we've just been talking about. It's just a really, really good practical example. And then Judy, if you could just read page 163, and it's the first full paragraph, "We Know What You Are Thinking."
Okay, one second. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Judy, and I'm a compulsive eater, a recovering compulsive eater. And I'm sorry, Gail, did you say our friend proceeded? No.
We Know What You Are Thinking, page 163.
Okay, right above that. Got it.
Yeah, thank you.
We know of an AA member who is living
Judy. It's the paragraph before then. We Know What You Are Thinking.
Oh, all right. There are two we knows. Thank you. And do I read to the end of the second paragraph?
No, just read that one paragraph, please.
We know what you are thinking. You are saying to yourself, "I'm jittery and alone. I couldn't do that." But you can. You forget that you have just now tapped a source of power much greater than yourself. To duplicate with such backing what we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Judy. So yeah, if we put the work in, then we get to tap into that power. And as the big book says, all our problems are solved. And we're not going to read the next bit that I've highlighted because it's 5 pages long. But if you read that yourself, it's on page 213. In fact, the whole story is amazing. But if you've not got time to read the whole story, just read page 213 to the end of the story. And again, that is such a beautiful story to read, which talks about how a fellow came to connect with the higher power. And then the other important section when it comes to step two is appendix two, which talks about spiritual experience. And I'd completely missed this until recently, but somebody pointed out to me that this is almost written like an amend when you read it, because a sudden spiritual experience is not what everyone has or has to have. In fact, most of us come to a growing awareness of our higher powers. We're reminded that the resource is within us and that the essence of a spiritual experience is just that, an awareness of a higher power. But because Bill had a sudden spiritual experience, what the writers are saying is that we didn't mean to say that everybody, or to suggest that everybody, is going to have a sudden spiritual experience. And if that's the impression we gave, then we apologize for that, because most of us come to have this growing awareness of a higher power. And once again, the principle of having an open mind is emphasized alongside willingness and honesty. I have to have faith that there is a power. And initially, I might not know that. I might just see that in the faces of recovered fellows. What I need to do is ask God to help me to learn to trust and let go. If my hands are holding on to stuff, I can't open my hands to receive God's gifts. The same if I have a closed heart and mind. Do not be afraid to give up the power of you. And how is it working anyway? You know, the power of Gail was really not running a successful life for me. And my self-talk is invisible, but I listen to that. Think about how I get to know a new person in my life. How have my relationships with others grown? And then apply the same principle to growing my relationship with God. And if you haven't read The Spiritual Experience recently, I would just really encourage you to get a reading buddy and just read it with somebody, because it really comes alive when you read it with somebody. So there's just a few questions that were really, really helpful to me that my sponsor went through with me when I did step two. And are you convinced you need a power other than you? Are you willing to believe that such a power may exist? What are your old ideas about a power greater than you that may get in the way? And what do you want and need from a higher power? And like we did last week, we're just going to take a couple of minutes. If you just jot some bullet points down, and then we'll just, Sophie will time us for just 1 minute shares, just to feedback and just so that other people can hear your ideas as well. So let's just take about 2.5 minutes just to, you don't have to answer all the questions. You might just want to pick one, but just jot some thoughts down about those questions, and then we'll just hear some feedback from you sharing. Thank you.
What pages are those questions on?
In the booklet, they're on page 19.